way things are going. Aren't you ready to show me the way you feel? Well, it says we the people upon our Bill of Rights. But I wonder when the sheeple will ever see the light.
Well, greetings, everybody. Praise Yahweh. Pastor Buddy joining you live here tonight. Got a great program, part 8 of Growing in Grace and Knowledge. And we got some very interesting information for you tonight. So you want to stay tuned to the Shepherd's Call with Pastor Buddy. I'll be right back just as soon as our good brother down in Texas brings us in here tonight.
With the way things are going, aren't you ready to show them the way you feel? Hey, America, now open up your eyes. Are you gonna just watch the nation die?
Glad to have you in here, ladies and gentlemen. Like I say, we got a great message. Now, it's part 8. We've done 8 hours on this growing in grace and knowledge. And it's a very complicated spiritual growth. Nothing comes easy in spiritual growth. You must strive to enter in at the straight gate. And now, when I say striving to enter in, that means that you've got to really get in there and push, ladies and gentlemen. And if you push and strive to enter in, you're going to make it. You're going to grow. But if you fail to heed, some people start out real good and they're on fire. But when it gets into the trenches, when it gets into the dirty work, when it gets down to the common labor for the gospel, that means you're hated for the name. That means you're despised for the truth that the name brings. And it will, because Yahweh said he would lead you into deep things and things that you probably have never heard of. Tonight, a review of the book from the People's Voice, The Life of an American Jew in Racist Marxist Israel, Part 1, Jack Bernstein. Now, Mr. Bernstein was born in America, and he spent his first 20 years here, and he went to Israel. He bought into the Ashkenazi Zionist dream. And so away he goes to Israel, a young man, and this is his adventure as he stages his development, and he begins to find things out that he didn't know about. And so we're going to talk about that tonight. Judaism, he says, this is Jack Bernstein's personal testimony, Judaism is a religion, but Zionism is a political movement started mainly by Eastern European Ashkenazi Jews who for centuries have been the main force behind the communist socialism. Boy, that's indictment right off the bat. The ultimate goal of the Zionist is one world government under the control of the Zionists and the Zionist-oriented Jewish international bankers. In Germany, the average Jews were victims of the Zionist elite who worked hand-in-hand with the Nazis. Now, that's an accusation that many people have never made. Many of these same Zionist Jews who in Germany that worked with the Nazis came to Israel and joined hands with the Zionist, the communist Jews from Poland and Russia. It is the two faces of communism and Nazi-style fascism that rules Israel. Democracy is merely a surface illusion. Now, the late Jack Bernstein was a rarity because he was an American Zionist who actually returned to Israel, not for a vacation or a summer on a kibbutz, but to live and die in Israel, building a Jewish nation. What makes him almost one of a kind was his ability to see through the sham and the hype to the oppressive, racist character of Zionism, as practiced in modern Israel, and his courage to denounce it with force and fervor of an Old Testament prophet. Bernstein tells how it was, how it is, and how it will be, as long as American taxpayers tolerate the religious leaders bowing down to every wish and whim of the Ashkenazi Eastern European elite, which rules Israel. Now, we know that Mr. Biden just went over to seek an accord with the Palestinian and the Jewish peace treaty, or peace talks, as they're going to try to revive them. And while he was there, the Zionist regime actually announced that they were, instead of wanting to make peace, they were going to build 1,600 houses in the disputed territory on the West Bank. Well, that made Mr. Biden, you know, it was almost a slap in the face. And of course, after Israel done it, they turned around and apologized. But ladies, this is how they work. They draw attention that they want peace, but then they'll shoot babies in the back. It's horrific. I mean, if you really know the story. And of course, all the Palestinians have got is rocks with the little children they're throwing at the big tanks and things of this nature. And it's a one-sided war, almost. And for you people that sympathize with Israel, thinking that they're God's chosen people, here's Mr. Bernstein, a Jew, an Ashkenazi, tells how it was. He takes the reader on a guided tour through Israel's history, institutions, and values, demonstrating how that the best traditions of biblical Judaism have been obscured, corrupted, or cast out to make way for the totalitarian, militaristic, chauvinist monster that is in Israel today. Bernstein tells how it was, how it is, and how it will be, as long as the American taxpayers tolerate their leaders bound to every wish and whim of the Ashkenazi Eastern European elite that rules Israel. He takes the reader on a guided tour through Israel's history and their institutions and values, demonstrating how the best tradition of biblical Judaism have been obscured. And Bernstein really is telling it like it is. And Marxist Israel, Marxist, racist Marxist Israel. Now, that's what he said. I didn't say that, but that's what Mr. Bernstein said. He said it's a racist Marxist state. Well, I do know that unless you're Jewish, you cannot become a citizen of Israel. Now, that sounds like it's racist, don't it? But it's the only nation in the world that does these things that we know of, and yet they get away with it, and Christians support it. And yet, when they came to America, they encouraged us to adopt, immigrate, let all the immigration gates open, and the flood gate was open by the laws that they passed. Many Jews, and many more non-Jews, won't like this book, he says, but nevertheless, I am going to tell you my story, how it was when I had my dreams shattered by living in Marxist, racist Israel. And so we begin. Before Israel became a state in 1948, Jews worldwide were filled with Zionist propaganda that Israel would be a homeland for all Jews, a refuge for persecuted Jews, a democratic country, and the fulfillment of biblical prophecy. I myself am an Ashkenazi Jew who spent the first 25 years of my life in the United States, the country that has given all Jews freedom and the opportunity to prosper. And prosper we did, to the point that at one portion of the Jews, the Zionists, have gained a position of powerful political and economic dominance and control in the United States of America. To fully understand the story I'm about to tell, it is important that you understand what Zionism really is. Zionist propaganda has led the American people to believe that Zionism and Judaism are one and the same and that they are religious in nature. This is a blatant lie. Judaism is a religion, but Zionism is a political movement started mainly by East European Ashkenazi Jews who for centuries have been the main force behind communist socialism. The ultimate goal of the Zionist is the one world government under the control of the Zionists, and the Zionist oriented Jewish international bankers of communist socialism are merely tools to help the Ashkenazis, Zionists, to accomplish their goal. He states, I was a victim of Zionist propaganda. After the 1967 war, we Jews were filled with pride that our homeland had become so powerful and successful. Then, too, we had been filled with the false propaganda that Jews in America were being persecuted. So between 1967 and 1970, approximately 50,000 American Jews fell for this Zionist propaganda and migrated to Israel. I, Jack Bernstein, was one of those suckers. After being filled with all this false Zionist propaganda, I felt that I would have a better chance to succeed in the new Jewish state. There was an added enticement, the spirit and challenge of pioneering and of helping my fellow Jews. I had no emotional conflict with leaving the United States because I was still able to keep my U.S. citizenship and would return to the U.S. at any time that I desired. You see, Jews are allowed to be citizens of both Israel and some other countries. The United States is one of those countries. The U.S. government allows a Jew to be a citizen of both U.S. and Israel. Now, I wonder if that luxury is afforded to others. I doubt it. German Americans cannot be citizens of both the United States and Germany. Italian Americans cannot be citizens of both U.S. and Italy. Egyptian Americans cannot be citizens of both U.S. and Egypt. But a Jewish American can be a citizen of both Israel and the United States. This is a good example of the power of the legislation that has been passed, and that shows you the power that Zionist Jews have over the United States government. I believe that I would arrive in a Jewish paradise. Now, before leaving for Israel, a Jewish friend of mine had made arrangements for me to stay a few days with his sister and her spinster aunt. After arriving at Lod Airport, just outside of Tel Aviv, I took a bus to the home of Miss Delbu and her aunt. And when I saw Ophelia, it was love at first sight. I started calling her Ziva, her Hebrew name. Ziva is a Sephardic Jewish from Iraq who, like myself, had fallen for the Zionist propaganda and had migrated to Israel. She was employed as a hairdresser, and I fell deeply in love with her. Me, an Ashkenazi, and Ziva, a Sephardic. Now, after visiting with Ziva and her aunt for 2 days, I left to spend 6 months at a worker kibbutz. That's what you pronounce that. And well over 150 such communes then operating in Israel. Since then, many more have started, especially in the territory that was taken from the Palestinian Arabs. A kibbutz is a farming and sometimes industrial venture. It is important to explain that Israel's system is a Marxist ideal brought to Israel by the Ashkenazi Jews who migrated to Israel mainly from Poland and Russia. These Jews are part of that bunch of Jews known as the Bolsheviks. Before 1917, they were the force that laid the foundation for the Bolshevik Revolution of 1917 in Russia and the start of communism. And so their brand of government was styled, although they said it was a democracy, it has now become a socialist style of communism. Now again, I want to point out and even to emphasize that it is some of the same bunch of Ashkenazi communist socialist Jews that migrated to Israel, who gained control of the Zionist movement and have dominated the government of Israel since its very beginning in 1948. Now, prior to 1967, most of the work on the farms was done by Jews. But since 1967 war, the work has been done by Arabs, who are paid a very low wage, and by volunteers from overseas. Members of the kibbutz, all Jews, share all things equally. They receive clothing, food, and a small allowance. All profits from the farming ventures go to the kibbutz account for future use. Each of these are affiliated with one of Israel's Marxist parties, ranging from socialist to diehard communist. I was not a hardcore communist, yet I was happy to leave after 4 months, 2 months earlier than originally planned. During the time I was working in the kibbutz, I carried on a courtship with Ziva, and she was one of the reasons that I left after only 4 months, because we were to be married. Now, the marriage ceremony was held in the Sephardic synagogue. The ceremony was simple but beautiful. Ziva and I were so happy, but our marriage created serious problems. You see, Ziva is a Sephardic Jewish, and I am an Ashkenazi. And for an Ashkenazi Jew to marry a Sephardic Jew is frowned upon by the ruling elite in Israel. To understand this, you must realize the difference between the Sephardic and the Ashkenazi Jews. The powerful Zionist propaganda machine has led the American people to believe that a Jew is a Jew, one race of people, and that they are God's chosen people. I will deal with the God's chosen people lie later. First, it is important for you to understand that Jews are not one race of people. There are two distinct groups of Jews in the world, and they come from two different areas of the world. The Sephardic Jews from the Middle East and North Africa, and the Ashkenazi Jews from Eastern Europe and Germany. The Sephardic is the oldest group, and it is they, if any, who are the Jews described in the Bible, because they lived in the area described in the Bible. They are blood relatives to the Arabs, and the only difference between them is the religion. The Ashkenazi Jews, who now comprise 90% of all Jews in the world, had a rather strange beginning, according to historians. Many of them, Jewish, the Ashkenazi Jews, came into existence about 1,200 years ago, and let me explain how it happened. At the eastern edge of Europe, there lived a tribe of people known as the Khazars. About the year 740 A.D., the Khazar king and his court decided that they should adopt a religion for political purposes for their people. So representatives of the three major religions, Christianity, Islam, and Judaism, were invited to present their religious doctrines. The Khazars chose Judaism, but it wasn't for religious reasons. If the Khazars had chosen Islam, they would have angered the strong Christian world. If they had chosen Christianity, they would have angered the strong Islamic world. So they played it safe and chose Judaism. It wasn't for religious reasons that the Khazars chose Judaism. It was mainly for political reason. Sometime during the 13th century, the Khazars were driven from the land, and they migrated westward, with most of them settling in Poland and Russia and in Eastern Europe. These Khazars are now known as Ashkenazi Jews, because these Khazar Ashkenazi Jews merely chose Judaism. They are not really Jews at all by blood. Throughout their history, these Polish and Russian Ashkenazi Jews practiced communism and socialism and worked to have their ideals implemented in these countries. By the late 1800s, significant numbers of these communist socialist Jews were found in Germany, the Balkans, and even all over Europe. Because of their interference in the social and governmental affairs of Russia, they became the target of persecution by the Tsars. And because of this, migration of these communist social-oriented Jews began, some went to Palestine, some to Central and South America, and a large number came to the U.S. And in 1897, the first Zionist Congress was held in Switzerland. At this Congress, it was decided to work toward the establishment of a Jewish state and search for land on which to build this Jewish state. Great Britain offered Zionists land in Africa, and this the Zionists rejected because they wanted Palestine. At that time, Palestine was inhabited by 500,000 Palestinian Arabs and a few Palestinian Jews who are blood-related and who had lived together in peace for centuries. While Palestine, as their choice for a homeland, European Ashkenazi Jews began migrating to Palestine. As I explained earlier, most were communist, socialist-oriented, with some of them being radical, Bolshevik communists whose aim is world dominion. So when you think of Jews, especially as related to Israel, keep in mind that there is a great difference between Sephardic and Ashkenazi Jews. They are not one united people. They are divided socially, politically, and especially racially. Now back to Ziva, a Sephardic Jewish, and I, an Ashkenazi Jew, and our lives in the so-called democratic country of Israel. The Sephardic Jews are a second-class citizen. For the first 3 years of our marriage, it was necessary for us to live with Ziva's aunt. This was because of the critical housing shortage in Israel and because of racism. Housing is allotted as follows. Number one, Ashkenazi Jews who have lived in Israel for many years are given first choice. Second in line are Ashkenazi Jews from Europe, especially if they are married or married an Israeli-born Ashkenazi Jew. The next favored are Ashkenazi Jews from the United States, especially if they marry an Israeli-born Ashkenazi. Sephardic Jews have the next choice of whatever housing is left. At the bottom of the list are the Muslims, the Druze, and the Christians. Christians are last. How about that? Oh, but the Christians love it. They love to be the rug for the Ashkenazis. Opportunities for unemployment follow the same pattern. Ashkenazi Jews get the choice. Jobs. Sephardic Jews next. The Muslim, the Druze, and the Christians fill the menial jobs, with a great many left unemployed. Even though I was an Ashkenazi Jew from the U.S., I was placed on a lower list of housing because I had married a Sephardic Jewish. Being denied housing was my second experience of the intense racism that exists in Israel. From the very beginning of my arrival in Israel, many slurs were yelled at me. We American Jews were merely being tolerated because Israel, to survive, must depend on gifts of American Christians and Jews and the sale of worthless Israeli bonds in America. There is jealousy among the elite Israelite Ashkenazi Jews toward American Jews. Even if the American Jews are also Ashkenazi, many times I was told to go home. We want your money, but we don't want you. However, there was a portion of the American Jews who were welcome and given favored treatment. They were the card-carrying communist Jews. Of the 50,000 American Jews who, like myself, had migrated to Israel between 1967 and 1970, about 20%, or 10,000, of them were Marxist-oriented, with a great number of them actually card-carrying communists. They were welcomed by the Israeli authorities and local Ashkenazis and were given favored treatment, housing, jobs, and social life. It must be noted, besides coming from the U.S., a great number of communist Jews were migrating to Israel from Chile, Argentina, and South Africa. Of the 50,000 who had migrated to Israel during the time, 80% of us eventually returned to the U.S. The 20% who remained were those who were card-carrying communists or sympathetic to Marxism. Now, ladies and gentlemen, you thought that Israel was a democracy. You've been told that. I've been told that. The churches have been told that. The preachers tell us that it's a democracy. The politicians tell us that. And we spend enormous large sums of federal aid to Israel. But Israel has three faces, according to Mr. Bernstein. From what I've told you so far, you must have the ideal that Israel is a Marxist, a socialist, communist country. This would be correct, but Israel has three faces: communism, fascism, and democracy. The Ashkenazi Jews who migrated to Israel from Russia brought with them the ideology of socialism and communism and have put it into practice, and is much of the ruling elite. The Ashkenazi Jews who migrated to Israel from Germany, while sympathetic to communism and support it, tend to favor the practices of Nazi-style fascism. And during World War II in Germany, these elite Zionist Ashkenazi Jews worked closely with Hitler's Gestapo in persecuting the lower-class German Jews and delivering them to communist concentration camps. Oh, my. Well, that's an accusation from Mr. Bernstein. Now living in Israel with these elite Jews who were well-trained in Nazi-style fascism, and favor it highly, have imposed many facets of fascism on Israel. To give the impression that Israel is a democracy, members of the Knesset, Israel's Congress, are elected, an odd type of election. This is where Israel's so-called democracy stops. It doesn't make any difference which party wins an election, the Likud or the Labor of the elite Zionist Jews rule in a dictatorial manner, much like the Democrats and Republicans in America, giving favors to the elite clique and brutally suppressing any dissent. In the communist Zionist scheme of world domination, it is Israel's role to continuously stir up trouble in the Middle East. And since wars are a big part of the scheme of aggression, it is only natural that from early childhood on, Israeli youth are trained mentally and physically for war. For instance, Israel has its equivalent of Hitler's youth group. It is the Gadina, and all high school senior students are required to participate, boys and girls. Like Hitler's youth group, the youth in Israel's organization are dressed in khaki uniforms. They take training and engage in paramilitary exercises, and even at play, guns and thoughts of war are always present. When on a picnic, instead of taking along a baseball or soccer equipment, they take submachine guns and assault rifles and practice shooting and play in military games. Once graduated from high school, all young boys are required to serve 3 years in the army, and the girls are required to spend 2 years or 4 years in the Navy or Air Force, and three for girls. Ultra-Orthodox religious Jews are exempt from military service. Once out of service, a number of ex-service people join the Shin Bet, the equivalent of Hitler's Gestapo. Like the Gestapo, they engage in repressing anyone who acts or speaks out against the Marxist and fascist government of Zionist-dominated Israel. And like in Nazi Germany, all people in Israel are required to carry identity booklets that identifies them and what their affiliation and political persuasion is. One day, I changed jackets and forgot to take out my ID booklet. And when I went down to Tel Aviv, a police officer approached me and asked me for my ID card. I told him that I'd left it in my other jacket because I didn't have my ID booklet with me. I was taken to the police station, and at the police station, the desk sergeant informed me that for not having my ID booklet with me, I could be jailed for up to 16 days without even being taken before a judge. All that was necessary was for the police lieutenant to sign a remand order. I asked for permission to make a phone call to my wife and tell her to bring my ID booklet to the station. The sergeant allowed me 2 hours to have my ID produced. I called my wife and she brought my ID, arriving just minutes before the two-hour deadline. If she had been late in arriving, I would have been taken to jail for 16 days for not having my ID booklet. This is just one indication that Israel is a police state and not a democracy. Now, concerning Nazism and fascism, please let me clear the point. Germans are an admirable people. I dare say even great. But in Germany, the general population were victims of the Nazis who, through cunning and brutally gained power in Germany, and the average Jews were victims of the Zionist elite who worked hand in hand with the Nazis. Many of these same Zionist Jews who were in Germany, had worked with the Nazis, came to Israel, and joined hands with the Zionist communist Jews from Poland and Russia. It is the two faces of communism and Nazi-style fascism that rule Israel. Democracy is merely an illusion of the people of the world. Regarding the tie between the elite Ashkenazi and the Nazis, take a look at the word Ashkenazi. Look again. Ashkenazi. Isn't that interesting? There's a great confusion regarding the relationship of fascism to communism. Fascism is a national socialism, and communism is an international socialism. Economically, we all know that Israel is bankrupt. Of course, this could have been predicted because Israel's economic structure is based on socialism, much like that of Russia. And the socialism in Russia failed. And if it wasn't for the huge sums of American aid and German aid, which are under, at least under the pretense of supporting this Zionist fascist government, and whenever a government of state and its citizens spend more money than the value of the goods produced, economic bankruptcy is bound to result. If it were not for the aid of America and Germany, Israel's economy would have collapsed long ago. Israel is America's welfare state in every sense of the word. It is America's most favored welfare recipient. While American farmers and small businessmen and laborers are struggling to survive, the U.S. government, dominated by Zionist Jews, are draining the pockets and the purses of American taxpayers to support Israel's socialist economy and war machine. Since the Israeli government knows and that the favored Zionists know that the Zionist pressure in America will ensure that America will keep sending massive amounts of money, along with Germany, and Israel's government and its favored citizens spend money like drunken sailors. This practice leads to inflation and eventually to an economic collapse. Comparing Israel to drunken sailors is unfair to sailors. Sailors spend their own money. Israel spends money it gets from American Germany. Because Israel is a welfare state depending mainly on this aid for survival, it is on a downhill slide. In 1982, Israel's inflation rate was 130%. In 1983, it was 200%. And then this year that he wrote the article, 1984, it is expected to exceed 400%. That means that hamburger that cost $1 last January would have risen to $5 by the end of December. History shows that no nation mired in economic problems as Israel has become has ever avoided an economic collapse. Only with a massive increase in American financial aid that has been drained off through the international bankers and the Federal Reserve, this economy would have collapsed long ago. And regarding the destructive tendencies of socialism, there are circumstances that allow a country to successfully provide social programs to help its people. It is possible that in a country that has sufficient financial resources and where its citizens are deeply religious and considerate, their fellow men. None of this exists in Israel. Even in countries where conditions are ideal, there lingers a danger. Since the government of the country provides for the needs of its citizens, most of these citizens have a tendency to lose incentive to work hard, and a country with complacent citizenry is easily conquered. Now, here is the key that Mr. Bernstein says that keeps Israel propped up. Tourism. It is one of Israel's main sources of income. The largest groups to visit Israel are American, but there are also many American Christians who want to visit the holy shrines to see the land of God's chosen people. These Christians come away very impressed and filled with religious fervor. While in Israel, Jews and Gentiles alike are carefully watched so that they do not stray and happen to see the sordid side of Israel, the true Israel. Like in Soviet Russia and other communist countries, visitors to Israel are taken on carefully planned guided tours. They are shown the religious sites, the universities, the lush orchards, the technical accomplishments, the arts, and to stir sympathy, they are taken to visit the Holocaust Museum. But kept from the eyes of the tourists are the ghettos, the prisons, where political prisoners, mostly Arabs, and Sephardic Jews are subjected to the most inhumane forms of torture. The tourists never see the widespread crime and the corruption and the cooperation between organized crime bosses and government and police officials. The tourists do not learn of the true inner workings of Israel's Marxist fascist government, nor do they see Israel's racism. I met one American tourist who couldn't help telling me about the wonderful religious feeling that she had by just being in Israel, the Holy Land. I remarked to her, just try giving the Bible to a local Jew and see how much religion and religious freedom that there is in Israel, I said. If seen by the police, you will be arrested. Now, the Holocaust may not have happened if the Zionist leadership in Germany had not cooperated with the Nazis. The Zionists worldwide had not persecuted various countries and to refuse to accept Jews from Germany. The Zionists in America persuaded President Roosevelt to shut the door and not allow Jewish refugees into America before the war, when there was still a chance for Jews to leave Germany. Now, Roosevelt himself was a Jew. It must be added that many people, including Jews, question whether the Holocaust happened as portrayed by Zionist propagandists, at least not to the extent that the Zionists claim. And this is easily proven by going to the proper historical searches that are available to you anywhere in the area that they claim the Holocaust happened. Utterly impossible by the facts. Possible only by the propaganda of the Zionist Jews, who have now persuaded most of the world that there really was a Holocaust of 6 million Jews dying in Germany or in Poland. The land on which the present state of Israel was built, formerly Palestine, which was once walked upon by Moses, by the Messiah, and by Mohammed. Now, since Palestine was the site of many religious events and has many religious sites, it is rightfully referred to as the Holy Land. So one would think that Palestine, now Israel, would tend to have an hour of holiness about it. When Palestinian Muslims and Palestinian Jews occupied Palestine, there was a religious aura. But since the Zionists took it over and set up the state of Israel, it is one of the most sinful nations in the world, where only 5% of the Jews are religious. It is interesting to note that they who are strongly religious are Arab Muslims and Arab Christians, who make up a small minority in Israel. Israeli laws suppress all religion. For instance, it is against the law to try and convict a Jew to another religion or to convert. It is against the law to try and convert a Jew. Against the law. You can't even proselyze them. Even if a Jew is an atheist or a humanist, a Christian is permitted to preach the gospel in a church building, but for the clergy or anyone to even tell one about teachings in the Bible outside the church building will bring him 5 years of a prison sentence. For a Christian to give the Bible or religious article to a Jew, it will bring 5 years sentence for just passing out religious articles. Even an act of kindness by a Christian toward a Jew, such as giving a gift of food, can be interpreted as trying to convert the Jew to Christianity, and can bring upon yourself a 5-year prison sentence. This is not told in the American churches when the tour groups leave, but they are told when they get there. The same law of religious suppression applies to those of the Islamic faith, who in act of kindness to give a gift of any kind to a Jew will bring them on themselves a swift 5-year prison sentence. And the treatment of religious Jews is very touchy for the ruling Zionists. Worldwide Jews and non-Jews that visit Israel as a land where Jews may practice their religion without persecution. Therefore, the Zionists do not dare risk suppressing Judaism for fear of arousing world opinion against them. So the ruling Zionists merely tolerate and control the religious practices of the small minority of religious Jews that live in Israel. The American people have been led to believe that Jews are God's chosen people. This myth was started by a small group of Jews with a few Jewish leaders who took excerpts from the Bible and interpreted them as the chosen people. But isn't it odd that it is not the religious Jews who claim to be God's chosen people? It is the atheist, non-believing Jews who have filled the world with this propaganda to claim that honor. Leading the cry that we are God's chosen people are the Marxist, Zionist, Ashkenazi Jews who for political purposes choose Judaism and who don't have a drop of biblical Jewish blood in them. One religious Jew said it well. At one time, we Jews were chosen by God to be his messenger. But long ago, we forfeited that right. Anyone who has ever read the Bible with an open mind knows that God gave Jews of that time special favors. But it was from the form of covenants, and these covenants were conditions. The conditions were not what God demanded and that the Jews did not obey. Time after time, they broke the covenants. They rejected God and turned to adoring mammon. It doesn't take a Bible scholar to realize that long ago, even the real Jews lost the right of being God's chosen people. In comparing the degree to which the followers of the three major religions practice their beliefs, I, Jack Bernstein, make this observation. Judaism. Few Jews, Sephardic or Ashkenazi, are religious. This is true in America, it's true in Israel, and it's true worldwide. Christianity. The religious Christian religion has felt the influence of Jewish meddling and infiltration, especially in America, resulting in confusion and bickering between the various Christian denominations. This has led to a lukewarm attitude amongst most Christians toward their religion. There is evidence to prove that Jews, on one of the many fronts, have started and stated that many of the Christian denominations and thus dominate the doctrine. We know that certain evangelists gain access to television worldwide where they preach the doctrine that the Jews are God's chosen people, and they're favored and highly rewarded. Islam. Muslims who follow the teachings of Islam are by far the most fervent of the three religious religions in following their beliefs. The Judeo-Christian ethic we hear so much about in America is a joke, the result of an intense Zionist propaganda campaign. I'll toss in one last thought about God's chosen people myth. God said, "Beware of those who call themselves Jews and are not, for they lie." Could it be that the Ashkenazi Jews are the people to whom God was referring? In the Holy Land, it would seem that there would be peace. Instead, war and preparation for war is ever present. The Israeli military machine that is stocked richly and deeply by the giving of the charity of the United States military defense system, which is controlled mainly by the elite Zionists in America, has become the fourth most powerful in the world. And from the standpoint of the amount of planes, tanks, and other fighting equipment, plus the fact that it is at the latest design does make the military machine of Israel very powerful, but in the army, serious weaknesses have developed. And before exploring the weakness of Israel's army, let's briefly review each of the wars which Israel has been involved, an average of one every 8 years since it became a state in 48. The 1948 war was just after Israel had declared itself a state. Palestinians and Arabs attacked the Israeli army, which had been formed out of the terrorist groups and out of STEM gangs. The reason for the attack by Palestinians was to try to regain their homes, which through murder and terrorism, the Zionists had confiscated. The Palestinians had been a peaceful people and were not trained in the art of warfare, while the Ashkenazi Zionist Jews who had migrated from Soviet Russia, Poland, and Germany had the advantage with the knowledge of tactical warfare. And in addition, Zionists had built up a large amount of arms that they had been given by the U.S. and communist countries and had illegally smuggled them into the area. The Arabs were defeated in the process and Israel conquered more Palestinian territory. 1956, they again ruled as they defeated Egypt and Syria. So England, and along with France and Israel, conspired to attack Egypt. With Egypt nearly subdued, America's President Eisenhower stepped in and ordered England and France and Israel to withdraw. At that time, the United States was still militarily strong enough to back Eisenhower's order. So England, France, and Israel did withdraw. And this was the only time during which the U.S.-Israeli relations that a president put the interests of America ahead of Israel's. 1967 war. Tension was mounting between Egypt and Israel over territory and the two countries along the Sinai and the Gaza Strip. To help Israel get an unfair advantage, the Soviet Union resorted to trickery. Soviet diplomats in Egypt told President Nasser to threaten war but not to attack. When Soviet diplomats told Israel's leaders to threaten war and then go ahead and attack, this act of treachery enabled Israel to attack while Egypt was off guard and destroyed Egypt's military capacity in 6 days. Even though Israel's attack on Egypt is called the 67 War and often referred to as the Six-Day War, it can hardly be called a war. Egypt, the most powerful Arab nation at the time, didn't have a chance. Trickery on the part of the Soviet Union and Israel, as I have explained, rendered the so-called 1967 war nothing more than a treacherous act of terrorism, for which the Soviets and Israel are famous. This is the testimony that I have written. I am Jack Bernstein, to let you know what I think about racist Marxist Israel. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that's Mr. Bernstein's testimony. He wrote this book. He's now deceased, and we have his testimony here. Now, you can draw your own conclusions, but you need to study deep, and you need to know that everything ain't as you have been propagandally convinced that is true about Israel. Israel is not the people that you think that they are. Most of them have come from other places. And, ladies and gentlemen, we need to know the truth about these things. You listen to Pastor Buddy tonight, and I give you a book review of Mr. Jack Bernstein, a Jew in America, went to Israel, and lived for a while, and deducted that it was Zionist Marxist socialism that was dominating in Israel. You have no freedom there. You're it's a police state. It's very, very controlled. And you have to be a Jew to become a member. Well, that's the only nation, I think, in the world. Well, you can write me tonight. Pastor Buddy, Post Office Box, 2284, New Tazewell, Tennessee, the zip 37824. Or you can call me tonight, area code 423-626-2172. I'm sponsored by Dr. Gary tonight. 1-877-289-7439 for America 2 and Vitamir. Brother Paul for STEMJAC, 1-800-253-2748. Two good men that are supporting the Shepherd's Call Radio Ministry. I would like to encourage you to join us and support us. Send me your tithes and offerings if you can. And if you support this doctrine, you just address your cards and letter to Pastor Buddy, Post Office Box 2284, New Tazewell, Tennessee. I'll see you.